This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Jason McGee from IBM.
Great to be here again.
It's been a busy couple of months for you. Not only have you been restructuring everything you do to begin with, you've acquired Red Hat. Can you give us some idea of what that's going to mean for the IBM cloud setup?
If you look at our strategy over the last couple of years with cloud, hybrid has been a core tenet of our strategy. We believe for a long time that enterprises especially are going to have some blend. Multi-cloud is emerging as a reality as well. We've been on a journey to build a world-class public cloud and to provide on-premise private cloud capabilities. Red Hat just helps us reinforce and accelerate that journey. Red Hat's been doing something similar with RHEL, of course, and with OpenShift and things like that. So we just feel like bringing those two things together will really help us joint way properly address what's going on in the market. I think if you look at workloads, at the end of the day, to me, cloud is all about the actual applications and workloads that people are trying to run. And we've had a lot of adoption of cloud over the last 5 years, but the bulk of IT workloads are still in traditional systems. What do we need to do to help them move into cloud as well? And that's really, I think, at the heart what the Red Hat thing's about for us.
IBM's made a lot of acquisitions, particularly in the cloud division. Now you've got Red Hat, which is such a big player. How do you start to look at all the various components you've got, all the various applications, the services, and split them up? Will some of them go with the Red Hat team and they will then run them because it makes sense to integrate there? Or will you keep hold of all of it in a separate place?
Some of those details will be worked out over time. The best way to think of it is, as two separate organizations, we've been working together in open community for a long time. Joint projects were here at CloudNativeCon, KubeCon, Kubernetes, Istio, lots of projects IBM and Red Hat have been working together on. That continues, and we figure out in a joint way what our focus areas are going forward and how to work together in the community to build this platform. My personal history, I'm an app server guy. I spent the first part of my career building WebSphere app server and doing Java. There's a lot of parallels, actually, to what's going on today. I really feel like in a lot of ways we're just rebuilding app servers in the cloud era. And Kubernetes and Istio and Cloud Foundry, all these are elements of a new platform that we're working to build. Part of, I think, my goal, I think what Red Hat's been after too in the open source community is how do we all work together to find that platform? Together, we'll be able to do that faster.
Together is an interesting challenge because you are probably the biggest Cloud Foundry distributor on the planet. Red Hat brings OpenShift and their competitors. How do you talk to your developers now and offer them both, or even offer them a third way of direct to Kubernetes without going through either of those two routes?
Foundry versus OpenShift and resolving it, what it really is what's the platform that we all want to build for customers? Customers want to be able to build applications in a way that's built on open tech, that gives them freedom of choice. If you look at what's happened over the last couple of years, you think about the world as a stack of capability. At the bottom of the stack, we've actually pretty quickly come to some consensus. We all agreed on Docker, which became Containerd. We've all agreed on Kubernetes. We seem to all be agreeing on Service Mesh with projects like Istio. What's not there yet is what I call apps and functions. Containers is the general purpose thing. Use Kube directly. Then we need an applications model and a functions model that are part of that platform. On the application side, we have Cloud Foundry, we have OpenShift, we have Heroku. There's a number of projects that have that 12-factor push code flavor. On the function side, I can't even keep track of how many functions projects there are. There's like 24 functions projects. That's all great from the standpoint of innovation and people exploring, but at some point we have to all come together and say, this is the programming model for those things. There's a new project called Knative that IBM, Google, Red Hat, a bunch of other people are working on. Knative is going to be the catalyst to bring that app and functions model into Kubernetes. On the Cloud Foundry community side, we're talking about how to take all that we've learned in Cloud Foundry and contribute it and leverage that as we bring apps into Kube. And we're doing the same thing on the function side. On the Cloud Foundry community, IBM sponsored a project called Irene, which is to take the back end of Cloud Foundry and put it on top of Kubernetes. So to me, these are all just like threads we're starting to pull together to ultimately get to one platform definition. If as an industry we can agree on that, then the future of Cloud Foundry and OpenShift, they'll all converge to whatever we think is the right go forward platform.
One of the things we do as developers is we get shown a new technology, and in order to learn it, we take something we've done before and we try and recreate it.
We build a web app.
But that's because we then know what that does. We know all the parameters and we can try and work out how they play out. But the danger in an enterprise is that that generally results in us trying to bend the new technology to work the way we've always worked. How do we shift the mindset to accept the difference, embrace the change?
That's why I'm actually really excited about this idea of a converged stack coming together. Just take those three examples of containers, apps, and functions represented by, let's say, Kubernetes, Cloud Foundry, and OpenWhisk, which is IBM's open source functions thing. At the end of the day, those are all container app platforms, but they are completely different stacks all the way to the bottom. And because they're completely different, we force a natural behavior. We try to take functions and make them do web apps and long-running stuff and twist it. Cloud Foundry was originally about 12-factor stateless apps, but they try to add storage and TCP and all these other things. Because naturally, a real workload is some blend of those styles. And when you're working in one slice, you want to change that slice to do everything. If we can all actually agree on how to build one thing, one Kubernetes layered stack that supports all three abstractions, then not only do customers only have to deal with one thing, but those things can be more pure. The functions thing can just be really good at event-driven functions, because if you wanted to do general network processing in TCP, you just switch over and write that in a container on Kubernetes directly on the same platform. That's what we're after right now, is how do we bring them together, let everything be simpler because we built it once.
But as we get towards that, we've got a whole bunch of moves we've got to take into account. And part of that is moving ourselves from where we are today into a container world. We can't lift and shift. It makes no sense to lift and shift, to treat a container just as an operating system less VM. But there's a mental shift. It's not a case of just saying, oh, look, my application breaks into 50 functions. I'll create 50 containers, because that's just going to drive people insane. Where do we get the architecture and the simplicity of that migration from? Does that come from the platform? Does that come from best practice? What do you deliver to customers to enable them to make that seamless?
We deliver a couple things. I think you're on to a very pragmatic reality of IT, that like you have a lot of existing investments and apps. Lift and shift might actually make sense for something, not necessarily to containers, but just, let's say, straight lift and shift to cloud. If your goal is to get out of a hardware refresh cycle, get out of your data center, do something like that. Part of the reason there's 8,000 people floating around upstairs is that containers can actually help both with the modernization of existing workloads and building new things. What we've tried to do in IBM is give people a path for this diverse set of workloads. Maybe I have a WebSphere app that's written in Java that I wrote 15 years ago, and this first step might actually be just containerize that. Don't refactor it. Don't turn it into microservices. Just containerize it and run it on a Kube platform. And by doing that, I get some deployment velocity benefits, some availability benefits, some scale maybe. And then I can slowly decompose it, refactor it as it makes sense. And so we've tried to make sure that we have a platform that does both, that we provide middleware that runs well on that platform, that we provide tools. We have a consultancy with the IBM Cloud Garage that like can help people actually figure out the process and help them on that journey. Not every app's going to make sense to refactor. Istio is playing an interesting role in this problem too, because Istio has this very fine-grained programmatic control over the routing of traffic. You can do interesting things like represent an existing monolithic app as a service endpoint in Istio. Originally, all the traffic just goes to the one thing. Then as you start to refactor that application, you can hide that refactoring behind the policy of Istio. So everyone consuming that doesn't know that the thing that was one is now two or three or four pieces, and you can rewrite the rules and let Istio manage the traffic. And that helps people with this journey. If somebody's using that app, how do they keep using it while I'm in the process of doing this refactoring?
How fast will that refactoring take place? Let's drop back 18 years. SOA, web services, all this same promise was being made then. We'd have all these little web services that would run around and we'd clip them together. Simple input, simple output, we refactor. What we actually got was web services that were so huge and chunky that they were unusable. If we're going to make this work this time round, it has to be a simpler process. It has to be something companies can adopt quickly, but without having to change too much of what they do. Because if there's too much change, we know they won't do it. What's changed in 18 years to make the whole refactoring work?
There's a couple of comments. One is, you got to be pragmatic, not purist. Not everything's going to move. You have to accept that. If you look at a cloud platform, it has to do the old boring VM stuff. It's got to run the old middleware stuff. It's got to run all the cool, awesome function stuff. There's going to be a diversity. What's different this time versus, let's say, the SOA era? In the SOA and web services era, all we really agreed on was how things talk to each other. We didn't say anything about how they were built, about how they were run, packaged, any of that. It was just, we'll all agree that we'll use this standard to talk to each other. So it's only like one little slice of the problem. So you could get exactly what you described, some big, slow to update, monolithic, giant thing that has a SOA web services API on the front of it. And that helps with some things, but it didn't really help with the full story. And I think what's going on now is you have containers are defining a way to do packaging. It's influencing how we do CI/CD. Microservices is really not a tech thing at all. Microservices is like a people organization idea. We're going to literally organize the team around small pieces that own their life cycle. So I just feel like we have a more holistic view today of what it takes to run a composable system, which is really what all these things are about. And that is both good and bad, I guess. It's bad in the sense that it's a bigger bar to get over for customers. It's more change. But it's good because we actually are more prescriptive about, like, if you want to be successful, you need to organize your team like this. You need to have strong CI/CD. You need to use a stack like Kubernetes to give you the flexibility. Here's all the pieces you got to bring together to do it. With our clients, you have to decide where to start. That's always the hard problem. Some people are starting with new things. They're building new stuff the new way. Some people are starting with refactoring. They're taking existing apps and saying, that one's really important. I can refactor. I think it depends on the team what the right answer is there.
Composable is an interesting word, isn't it? Go back 5 years, it was about Bluemix. Go back 30 years, it was about object-oriented programming. If we look around, we've got no-code and low-code environments appearing. And those are outside of IT's control. But oddly enough, we need to think about them because users are going to deploy these not just locally, they're going to want to deploy into the corporate cloud. They're going to put them in their own cloud services and connect corporate elements to them. How do we widen our controls over this? Because, oddly enough, a lot of what we're doing with cloud and all these new technologies are not about control. They're all about speed and velocity and excitement and living on the edge almost.
That's not new. Low code, no code is the latest rendition of our industry is just a spiral of the same ideas getting progressively better. Things outside of IT have been around for a long time. You're right that a lot of the tech that we talk about, especially in contexts like this, are about velocity. They're about allowing developers to deliver more quickly. The key to me, the way to put that control back into the story, is to make that control not be process and documentation, but real implementation. If you have a security policy or a compliance policy, there's a way to represent it in the system that's actionable. That's not you have to let this team do the work or you have to follow this 100-page document or this process, which has been the historical way to solve those problems, which is why everyone hates IT and which is why everyone bypasses IT when they want to build something because they don't want to do all that. The question is, can you make that easy? And I think containers is showing, platforms like Kubernetes is showing there are ways to solve that problem. The team responsible for the control can implement the control in a way that influences the behavior of the system. Istio is a good example of that. In some sense, if you think about it, in a microservices landscape with Istio, each microservice is a separate team. They just want to do their thing and deliver quickly. Istio is the layer over the top that's connecting them all together. So it's also the place where you can insert policy, where the central team can say, here's how things talk to each other. We want these certificates in place. We want this visibility or monitoring in place. And they can do all that without disrupting the individual microservice teams and forcing them to go through some onerous process. Turning it into real code, if you will, is the key that containers have enabled. Part of the reason they're popular, because control freaks like them, developers like it. Like, helps all of them. There haven't been many technologies that are like that.
How do we get management to buy into this? We have this weird problem at the moment. We're telling developers, fail often. Who cares if it screws up? Do it again. End users don't throw an app away on their phone if it gets updated 6 hours after the last update because the app has a value to them. But management still run around worrying about risk, and quite rightly so. That's the bit that determines whether your business is still there tomorrow morning. The problem with risk is risk doesn't deal very well with fast change. How do we change this conversation or provide an additional element to this conversation that plays to the boardroom to understand what we're doing to enable us to take on all these new technologies?
From my perspective, all these technologies are just tools that we use to get something done. The key to me in these kind of fast innovation models is we talk about innovating quickly, we talk about failing fast. What you really need is to build data, and that data needs to show that you can make continuous forward progress. The way to convince the executive team that this approach is the right approach, that these are good things to do, is not by saying I can do things quickly and fail all the time. It's by saying that I can continuously iterate and over time show forward progress. Continuous forward progress. If it's failing and going back and failing and going back, you're not making forward progress. And eventually people are like, why are we doing this? As a development team, you have to have that in your mind. I can break down the problem. I can deliver it quickly. I can deliver it in chunks. But those chunks need to continually make the system better while it stays up, while it's available. And I'm incrementally adding to it. And that's hard. That's actually hard for a lot of teams, is to get to the point where they can show that they're making that progress. My team runs our Kubernetes service and IBM Cloud. When we started, we have many of the same challenges around CI/CD and setting up the structure of the team. over time, we were able to deliver an MVP and iterate, and now we're doing 500 to 700 updates a week out of that service, all the time, globally, no downtime. So we built a track record that shows that we can progress. And by doing that, my executive team has a lot of faith in what we're able to do because we've shown that track record. So that's how I think you can crack the nut, is I can get stuff done continuously, reliably, in small pieces.
How do we find the talent to support this at the bottom end? It's very easy to look around this building and realize that I'm probably bringing the average age up all on my own. We look at the lack of talent we have available to us across the whole business, particularly in the technology sense. We don't like retraining inside companies because it costs money. It takes people out of the loop when they're doing things. So somewhere in this, we've got to balance bringing new talent in, retraining existing staff, and at the same time, still increasing our velocity of delivery. What do the tools make happen here?
You have to acknowledge that repurposing staff has to happen. It's just a pragmatic reality. When you do that, you have to recognize that not everyone will make the transition. Like, there will be people on the team who don't adapt well to new ways of working, and that's okay. And depending on the organization, maybe there's some other role for them in your organization that does suit how they work. But you have to do that. We had that ourselves at IBM as we transitioned from delivering software to delivering cloud services. That's a big change. You also have to be really careful about where you choose to spend your energies. Kubernetes is incredibly popular. Skills in Kubernetes are really hard to find. They're very expensive. There's not enough of them in the world. Going into a conference like this and looking at the 2 dozen, 3 dozen projects and saying, hey, we're going to put that all together ourselves in some company, it's not a really great use of whatever talent you have. Why are you trying to keep up with all of these projects? You have to decide how to adopt the tools. One of the common threads I see is people are adopting platform delivery models, either public clouds or package suites like Red Hat OpenShift or IBM Cloud Private or whatever that bring together the combination of all this technology. And the value of that is somebody else is figuring out what's the right versions of everything, how to integrate it together, how to make it work well together. So you don't have to focus on that part of the problem. And I see lots of organizations make that mistake where they, oh, it's open source, we'll just do it all ourselves. And that's hard. You need a lot of skilled personnel to do that successfully.
How do you drive your own best practice? If we look at IBM Cloud, it would be very easy to think about this all being x86 or maybe Linux in x86 running on top of Power. But the reality is, you're running Z. Hyperledger is running in containers. It's running in Kubernetes instances, something which IBM's been incredibly coy about talking about. And it makes a very serious point to enterprises that here is such a critical piece of infrastructure. And one of the failures on virtual machines with critical infrastructure was DBAs just did not want to go near a VM. They were paranoid that it would encourage people to put more on their servers, and they just wanted to hog all that resource in case they needed it. How do you go forward and say to people, look, this is really what we're doing and how we're doing it, and there's nothing in your IT enterprise, Mr. Customer, that you can't do the way we do?
I actually try to tell our own story a lot. Compared to everybody else in the cloud space, IBM looks the most like the customers that we're all talking to. We have the same journey and the same transformation. And so I do share our story a lot. In the keynote tomorrow, I'm going to touch on that. Just show a view of all the stuff we're running on Kubernetes. Not only are we running blockchain on Kubernetes, we're running our Watson AI platform on Kubernetes, we're running relational databases and data warehouses on Kubernetes, we're running every kind of system you can think of. We're running the weather.com website on Kubernetes, on IBM Cloud, super high-scale, consumer-facing site. The point of that message isn't to brag about IBM, it's to show that these platforms, we actually have experience doing this. We know what it means to run mission-critical systems on it. Kubernetes is stable and flexible enough to run a diversity of workloads. It's important to share those stories, and we do that informally in our relationships with clients, and we do that more formally in places like the IBM Cloud Garages, which is our consultancy, where we bring in clients and share with them how they can take advantage of our best practices and learn how to do these things.
One of the things that surprised me at this show that's missing from IBM's public engagement has been around security in Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. I'm heartened that we're having this security and hardening conversation before we've got to mass rollout. It's a massive shift. We've never had a technology where we've had this conversation so early in the cycle. Yep. IBM's one of the leading security players in this market, yet your security teams are absent and conspicuously absent here. Why?
That's an important space for us, and we have done a lot of work on the cloud side around security in the container space. As someone whose job is to run Kubernetes as a service, part of what I think about is what are the hard problems that I can solve for clients? Global deployments with high availability, I think, is a hard problem. Security is a hard problem, especially in a world where we think development teams are going to own their stuff end to end. That means they have to become security experts, but that's hard. So how can I do that for them? We've done a lot of work with vulnerability scanning, network security, integration with our X-Force team that has risk analysis and intelligence about threats on the internet, and try to bring that into our platform so that's easy for developers to build secure systems. Recently, one of the things we announced is this capability called Data Shield. So we took hardware security enclave technology from Intel, SGX, combined it with a partner solution from Fortanix that makes it easy to take an existing app and wrap it to leverage it, and deploy that via Kubernetes on our cloud. So now you can run encrypted, in-memory encrypted applications on a server in public cloud on Kubernetes, and that's all out of the box. There's lots of examples like that where we're trying to bring that security dimension into our platform, take some of our learnings from our security business and make it part of our cloud design.
I'm going to enjoy your keynote, I suspect, tomorrow morning. Thank you for your time, Jason.
Thank you so much.